I'm Cam, and this is the Nerd Book Review. Today, I will be reviewing The Umbral Storm by Alec Hudson. I'll give you the book info real quick, and a short, very short author bio, because Alec does not have a longer bio anywhere. 656 pages long. Kindle edition was first published May of 2022, and it is the first book in the series, The Sharded Few. Alec grew up in a geodesic dome and a bookstore in Massachusetts, and he now lives in Shanghai, China, with his wife Shining and his brand new kiddo. He's a big Ultimate Frisbee fan and really needs to write a proper bio somewhere. Hint, hint, if you listen to this, Alec. Once again, congratulations on the kiddo. Okay, Chris will give the book cover review.
1,000 years ago, the heart of the world was shattered, its fragments scattered across the lands. In the chaos that followed, martial orders arose to gather the shards, for it was found that great powers were granted when these pieces were bonded to the flesh of the chosen. These are the Sharded Few, warriors imbued with the divine energies that once coursed through the heart, driven to absorb enough fragments to claim godhood. Darren has known nothing in his life except suffering. Orphaned at the edge of the realms, indentured to a cruel slaver, he has little hope of escaping his circumstances. But elsewhere, ancient powers are stirring. New alliances threaten the peace of the old order, and against all odds, Darren will find himself a player in a game unlike anything he could have imagined.
Thank you, Chris. So I'm going to give my take real quick, and then I will break the book down. An orphan boy discovers he's one of the Sharded Few who can be imbued with godlike powers and levels up like a video game. For this book, I'm going to give a few more spoilers than I typically would. It's kind of broken down into two parts. There's the first part, the beginning, where Darren is the indentured servant, basically a little better than a slave for the next several years, to the second point of view character named Heth. His family has his contract. He's got other slaves. And the very beginning of the book, Heth actually flogs Darren because his dad forces him to after Darren gave away a very, very expensive crab that they had gotten. I guess I should describe that. Basically, these giant crabs live in the tops of these trees that are like hundreds, maybe thousands of feet tall. And the slaves owned by Heth, the second point of view character's father, are supposed to be getting those crabs because they're delicacies. Their shells are used for armor, and their meat is a delicacy for even richer people. So when Darren gives away one of these crabs to a girl he meets in the forest who is starving to death, then the master makes Heth, his son, actually flog Darren. Now, this is important and kind of sets up the early stages of the relationship with Darren, because pretty early on, the main part of the story starts, and we find out that Darren is one of the imbued. Those are people who can eventually bear those shards if one of the holds takes them, and then they'll become the Sharded Few, so basically like gods on Earth. And we find out that Heth is a hollow, and what that means is that the hollows can actually be the servants of the Sharded Few, because the average person who is just who doesn't have any powers or who isn't a hollow would die very quickly after spending any amount of time in close proximity to the shard at the heart of each of the holds. So basically, kind of think of it like radiation is the way I kind of thought of it, is that if you both the sharded and the hollow are immune to radiation and the average person isn't. So Darren has been flogged by Heth, but almost immediately the tables are turned, and we now know that there's a good chance that Heth could be Darren's servant. And so there's obviously the potential for that to go poorly for Heth after having done that. But anyways, that's the opening up scenes, and they kind of do some of the world building. We also meet an unbound during that time. They are, he's just a random person who found a shard who happened to be imbued. And this Unbound is a real jerk. He kills Heth's father. He threatens to rape somebody. He does kill several slaves. He's got godlike powers. He actually rips one of Heth's father's arms off of his body and then bludgeons him with it. So it shows what the sharded few can do if they are unbound and not under one of the holds. And so we kind of see this world that's kind of a little gritty and a little bit bad right off the bat. And that's kind of what that opening scene is there to do, to show us what the sharded can do potentially. Also, the reason why there's the order that there is, in order to at least give people a little bit of protection. After talking about that little intro scene, I think it's important to start off with a little bit of a history lesson on the world, because it sets up everything else about it. So thousands of years ago, the entire continent that the story takes place on was ruled by an empire with a single emperor who held a magical artifact called the Heart of the World. It sounds like it was a giant crystal. That artifact brought magic into the world. A bunch of his lords rebelled and killed him and his family, and they shattered that heart into fragments. It was just as violent as it sounds like it might have been. When this happened, it basically destroyed the old imperial capital and also the summer palace that was close by and where the empress made her last stand. Also tore a rift kind of between the different dimensions of the world is kind of the way I took it. So it's a different place. So now occasionally rift beasts, we're talking like giant, like the size of castle size beasts that are mostly mindless and cause a lot of destruction. They'll come out of this rift that's still there even thousands of years later. Also, there's undead and just a general lots of bad things around this area. One of the holds, the Windhold, they actually patrol the area. They try to stop those beasts from getting out and causing problems for other people. It's kind of, I guess, what their general thing that they do is. So we have all these rift beasts. We have lots of bad things that can happen. So I think that the best way to describe this is something that I actually heard a description of this last week, that this world is gritty dark. Not grim dark, but gritty dark. So lots of bad things can happen. But if you're just the average citizen living in one of these places, or say you're slightly wealthy, you have money, and you don't have to directly deal with the sharded few, or you know, get out into the unsafe areas, then you can live a pretty okay life. Yeah, there's a rift, and yeah, there's people that go around resembling Homelander from The Boys on Amazon, that they might kill you, and there's absolutely no consequences if you get killed by one of these sharded few. But if you just live your life, you're going to live your life okay. The world's not getting worse. Magic's not dying or anything like that. It is what it is. And in large swaths of the world, people are just going around living their lives. So, as I mentioned, it's a secondary world. It takes place thousands of years after that killing of the emperor. It's kind of generally being described as broken down between the north and the south. So in the north, you have what is fairly typical lighter-skinned people. In the south, darker skin. You have colder areas up north as well as like a volcanic range, mountains, but you do have plenty of agriculture and stuff. In the south, you're going to have like savannas and deserts more often. The way things are broken down politically is you have those holds, which act as nations, and I'll describe them better once I talk about each of the holds, because as I mentioned, they're centered around those shards, and the people that rule those shards, the families as a general rule that rule those shards, they also are the political entities. So the Shadow Hold is the one where we'll spend most of our time during the book. They've got 12 cities that are described as being part of their empire or part of their hold, and so everybody follows the rules of the shadow in those cities and in the farmlands and woodlands around it. And so whatever their rules are, those are the rules you follow. Slavery is legal as well, at least with a shadow. So, you know, we're not dealing with a benevolent, purely good people in this area. Also, we know of at least one other sentient, non-human race called the Zamani. They're lizard men. I wouldn't be surprised if there's even more than that. We do also have an interaction with a dragon who is sentient as well at one point, kind of think Chinese-style dragon. Now, we'll get into the magic system, so that'll help flesh out those worlds and talk about the nations as well. So we have those broken fragments of the heart. They're the centers of different holds ruled by the Sharded Few. The Sharded Few can take fragments of that shard. The first time you get a shard, you're chosen by a hold. So Darren gets taken by one of the members, the ruling family of the Shadows, the Shadow Hold. He's a younger guy. He's a teenager, early 20s. He actually was being punished for not being tough enough or not being serious enough. And so his uncle, who is the ruler, sent him out with one of the Hollow, who they call Hounds, who can actually sniff out people who are imbued or Hollow. And so he actually found Darren and Heth while he was out there supposed to be looking for people like them. So Darren will get brought back to the Shadow Hold, and then almost immediately he will be taken to that shard within the first day and kind of has an encounter with it. And it chooses to give him his first shard. And now he is one of the Sharded Few, so he has a single shard. Basically, he's a lot more powerful than a just normal human now, but he is nothing compared to someone even who has two shards or three. Some of the guys with a lot more shards, you're considered fairly powerful even with among the sharded if you have, like, say, 8 to 10 shards. Anything more than that, and you're going to start getting really, really powerful. And so that's kind of how we get initially how you get a shard. After that, the best way to get a shard, if you don't find them on your own, is to go under the patronage of one of the important people, one of the important families within the Shadow. So they'll kind of be your patrons within the hold as well. You might all be under one ruler, basically, but there is definitely power shuffling and things like that among individual people. So those powerful people have extra shards because you can get those shards back when you die, for example, or it can be taken even a more powerful person. So Killian, that guy that finds Darren and Heth, actually ends up stealing the shard that the person who was unbound had. And so that's the way that he got more. You can only take shards every once in a while. You have to be able to control the magic within yourself. So most people, it'll take a couple of years before they can get their second one. The shards do help you live longer. I think it said that a couple of characters were a couple hundred years old even. One person, I think they said, was around 100 and didn't look very old yet. So you do live a longer life. The more powerful you are, both mainly genetics, that plays a big role in it. So you don't have to try nearly as hard if you were born to a family that was already sharded. So the ruling family of the Shadow, for example, they tend to marry only other people who have also been long-term shadowed. They do adopt people who are very powerful into the family who aren't. So even though they're kind of vampire-like, which makes sense because they're the Shadow, the second most powerful and one of the adopted sons is actually black. And he was from one of the southern kingdoms that they found the baby. So they do try to get other sharded if they can find them in other areas as well and bring them to their own, because there's a lot of infighting between the different holds, even if they're technically at peace. And it's not unusual. We find out pretty quick that if one person's caught out on their own, even if you're technically at peace with the other hold, if they think they can get away with killing you and taking your shards and not getting caught, then they'll do that as well. Once again, we're not talking about a noble, bright people here. So there are, we find out about at least, six or seven different holds. In the north, we have the Storm. They live on islands off the coast of the continent. We have the Fire. Obviously, they use fire magic. The Storm uses they use lightning, things like that. The Shadow uses shadow to actually, they can make it solid and use that kind of magic. There's also the Sky that we find out about. They seem to be less centered around a hold and more kind of like nomadic. Think of them as like a tribal type system where their main focus seems to be on keeping those rift beasts and other bad things within that area under lock and key, as opposed to being expansionist like the other people are. In the south, we know of at least the Blood. So they use blood magic. They can actually heal themselves as well. Then there is the Stone as well in the south. And there was a hold called the Sand. But about 30 years before the story starts, the Sand tried to take over everybody else and had a war, and they were wiped out. And so when the story starts, things are pretty stable, except that the remnants of the people of the Sand go into one of those places that magic's not usable anymore, that used to be an imperial place. And that's how they managed to stay, to kind of be a rebel force that's a little bit of a problem here and there, but not, you know, they're not giant problems. I've already talked about how there's three types of people: those who can have the shard, those who can't. Now, the part of this book that I didn't love was that progression style. So at various times, kind of, it's broken down. It'll be when Darren's being taught, but it kind of kicked me out of that movie in my mind I talk about all the time. They're at these fights at one time where people are training, or they're doing like exhibition type matches against another one of the holds. And he's sitting there thinking about what spells people are going to use. And they're like, oh, well, that's a tier 2 spell. That means you have to have at least, most people have to have at least 8 shards before they can get tier 2 powers. And, well, I'm more of an offensive-minded person or a defensive-minded person, so my powers are probably going to go that way. And it kind of broke me out of the story when they would do that, and I would start to think of like a video game, like an RPG game, where you would break down skills and you'd get points. Say your shards were your skill points that you got, and you put them into certain things, and you wondered whether you were going to get offensive skills or defensive. You had tier 1, tier 2, and then potentially tier 3, you know, spells or skills. And I don't love that from the progression genre, but that is what it is. And I feel like Alec probably did the best job of anybody I've ever seen with that genre, to where, like, the story itself was great and wonderful. The world building was amazing. And I really liked the characters too. I always talk about the two point of view characters. I've talked about them a little bit already, but I don't feel like all that was important for them, especially for Darren and Heth. Well, Darren is the one in power pretty quickly on, right? Well, he isn't the kind of character that only cares about that. And I've read some lit RPG especially where I felt like there's no real character building aside from that lit RPG element where they're just trying to level up. And so Darren, there was more depth to him than that. The Heth as well. I thought that Heth was a character who could have gone real poorly, real fast. You could have hated him. But he, as a character, decides that, yeah, this sucks, but I'm just going to have to deal with it because there's nothing else I can do. And he finds people that he cares about, and he helps them out as well, even though he's, you know, basically his life was a whole lot better as a lordling's son than it is as a hollow, who's basically just a servant within the hold. But he still tries to find some meaning in his life. And Darren doesn't just become angry and bitter over what happened to him. He's still healing from those flogging wounds when he's found by Killian of the Shadow House. And so, you know, I cared about both of those characters. there's another couple of characters who have a little bit more page time. They're not point of view characters, but Aaliyah, she's from the wilds. She really likes nature. She struggles a lot living in the Shadowhold, which is in the heart of an extinct volcano, and most of it is underground. Obviously, if you're someone who's lived in the trees for your whole life and now you suddenly have to live inside underneath, you know, millions of tons of rock, then it's hard. But she is another character that you know you see a lot. She is she's not a bad character. I don't know that she would be my favorite of the characters. She is a little bit less of a badass heroine on her own. But that's not to say that all of the female characters aren't, you know, badass heroines, because she doesn't have a shard, so it's awfully hard to be powerful. But the Shadow, as a general rule, allow their, you know, the women do fight. The women are trainers and things like that. So you're not going to deal with, you know, a whole bunch of them. One of the groups is misogynistic and doesn't allow women to fight, but they're kind of like the conniving politicians in the background as a result of that. Once again, the progression element is just not something I love, but I've talked now with a bunch of authors, and what I've gotten from them is that if you want to sell books right now and you want to make a living, even partially make a living off of these books and not just be your hobby, you have to do either lit RPG or progression, because that's what is selling and that is what is getting those page turns on Kindle Unlimited. I think Alec probably did as good of a job as an author could for me, with still having an important story that and being character driven, where it wasn't just all about that leveling up. Now, there are some of these characters that is all they care about, but it's kind of, you know, one thing Darren's always like, well, that's not the only thing I'm going to care about. I also care about people and things like that. So I did like the characters, and I still felt like there was depth to the characters in a way that I don't at all when it comes to like pure lit RPG. I've still never actually finished a lit RPG book. I've tried to read several of them, including a Spiffbo finalist, and I can't do it. It's not my genre. I have discovered that almost every other genre, I'm willing to give it a shot. I've read some Noblebright that I just don't care about or that I just don't care for, but I still can finish those books, and I just can't finish lit RPG. I will probably give some more attempts with other progression style books as well, just to see. And I would absolutely, if the second one of these Sharded Few books had been out, if number two was, I would have gone straight to it, because I still was super entertained. And even if I did get kicked out of that movie in my mind a few times because of, you know, breaking down the skill points and things like that, and instead of just, you know, envisioning the fight scene in my head, I was sitting there thinking of that, of breaking it down, a skill page on a video game. I guess now I should probably get into the recommendation phase specifically, because I'm already starting to do that. I've actually been doing it for a little while. As I mentioned on the Did We Like It, I really loved the story itself. I also like the characters, as I mentioned. I like Heth and Darren. They both could have turned bitter and angry, or, you know, Darren could have really abused Heth if that's what he had wanted to do, and nobody would have stopped him. But that's not the way that the author took the characters, and I feel like they both took the unfortunate circumstances that they ended up in and tried to make the best of those circumstances. I don't think anyone who had any sort of real page time was a character that I didn't care for at all. Like I said, the only thing I didn't really care for itself was the specific progression element. I also thought that Alec did a really, really good job of bringing the world to life for a place that had that was very large, potentially. The characters start off out in the woods, And then they're going to visit quite a few of those 12 cities even. And then we'll get to the Shadow. But I feel like even though I only looked at the map once, I wasn't struggling with place names or, you know, a general idea of where they were, despite the fact that they do move around quite a bit. And I feel like that's the kind of thing that shows like true skill from an author, and something that if it's not done really, really well, is an issue for me if there's people moving around, if you're going to different places, because that's the kind of thing that I struggle with occasionally, is, you know, knowing what the hell's going on or even caring. Sometimes I'll just shut down and not care, and I'll kind of forget all about even caring where someone is in the world or what the tactical situation is in the world, especially, you know, in a situation where there's various holds that sometimes fight each other or have border skirmishes. And I really felt like I understood and had a good grip of where things were in this book from the very beginning. And that, you know, that's a skill thing right there from the author. And then on the, I cared about the characters. On the how did it make us feel thing, you know, I'm not trying to pretend like I had a lot of feels while I was reading this. I was entertained. It's not, you know, an emotionally crushing book. There are bad things that happen to people, and you care about those characters. But I'm, you know, on a scale of 1 to Broken Earth trilogy, it's, you know, more on the middle to lower end of the scale for me. But I haven't found too many books that are pushing up against the Broken Earth trilogy either, as far as that goes. On the would we recommend it to others? Like I said, apparently progression fantasy is all the rage at this point, and any indie author who wants to sell a bunch of books has to make them. So in that case, I would say this is a great example of those type of books. If you like that, then it's incredibly well written, and I really enjoyed it. I haven't mentioned up until this point that I've already interviewed Alec in the past. When he was the first time he was a SPIFBO finalist. So he's now been a SPIFBO finalist with 2 separate books. So the first time it was with a book called The Crimson Queen, which was part of the Raveling series. And I loved the first series. So if you are listening to this review and thinking, well, I don't really care for progression that much, but I'm interested in this author, I loved The Crimson Queen. It was a hard 5. I went through the entire series, and I just loved it. The books were, I would say, in the way I always kind of bring them up and explain them, is that they are the closest thing to the Wheel of Time, but done from, if it had been from Lanfear, she was one of the Forsaken who loved the main character in a past age. Basically, if the Wheel of Time had been written from Lanfear's perspective, and was succinct instead of being 1,000 pages long, then that's the way I would have described the Raveling series and The Crimson Queen. Just loved it. It was probably my favorite of the books, the finalists that season, and would have been my top book. But, you know, this book still has that same level of quality that The Crimson Queen did. It's just a genre that I don't necessarily love as much. So I don't want to feel like I'm being negative on this book, because it's still incredibly well written. I still cared about the characters. I still cared about the story. And if book 2 had been out and available, I would have read it, you know, immediately after I read book 1. So Alec, put out book 2, please. But the last thing I always do is rate it on a 5-star system. And I'm giving it a 4.5. Once I said, aside from the progression elements, it was a 5-star for me. But I did hate that occasional being taken out and feeling like I was witnessing a video game as opposed to a, you know, straight fantasy story. You know, I'm still giving it the 5-star on Goodreads and Amazon, since there's no 4.5s. But it's definitely, you know, not that hard 5 for me just because of that. You take that out, and I'm probably giving this one a hard 5, because it's, you know, what was it, 650-some pages long, and I read it in 2 days, so I clearly wasn't too off-put by getting kicked out those other ones. On the who's the main audience and who should and shouldn't read it, I'd say teenager, you know, middle teens on, there's definitely a fair amount of violence. Not too graphic usually, but some of it can be a little graphic. There's no rape. So it's not too triggering, I wouldn't think, for anything like that. But I don't think that your kiddo needs to be reading this book. On the parting thoughts, it is kind of just weird to me to have a book that I really enjoyed so much in a format that I didn't love. So it's one of those things where you're just like, oh man, this is normally a hard five for me, but I don't care for that, you know, that video game leveling up. So still a great book. And if you like progression, then, you know, then that's, then I'm sure you're going to love it. I still read the book and I still am happy that I did. And like I said, I will absolutely read book two. But I think that progression element just takes it away that little bit to where I will go back and reread the Crimson Queen trilogy at some point, or I think it's trilogy. At this point, I feel stupid if it's not. But I would go back and reread that series at some point probably. But I probably, you know, I'm not going to go back and reread this book before I read book two. I'll look at my notes that I keep for all of these, and I'll read through my notes, and that's what I'm going to do, as opposed to if he suddenly put out a new book in the Raveling series, I might, you know, straight up go back and reread the whole thing. So, the next book that I will be doing, I actually have to look and see, because I have done two other podcasts for authors who will be putting out new books in September and October. So I actually have a couple of episodes recorded that I don't plan on putting out right away. We will see, I guess, once when that happens. But in parting, let me get all my usual spiel out. And here we go. The podcast is The Nerdbook Review. You can reach me at nerdbookreview@gmail.com, Facebook Nerdbook Review, Instagram Nerdbook Review, and whatever Twitter is called, Nerdbook Review. No the on any of those other things. We added the in there for some reason. I guess I should just call it Nerdbook Review, since that's what I usually call it. But too late for that now. You can also rate us on whatever platform you listen to it. I would love it if you gave us a 5-star on whatever you listen to it us on. We are on almost every platform at this point, from iTunes to Google to iHeartRadio, all that stuff we're on. So if you listen to us any of those places, please give us a good rating if you enjoy it. If not, get a hold of me, let me know. And I hope I haven't rambled on for too long. I hope you guys all have a great week, and I should be putting out another podcast in a week. Thank you.